This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's podcast is brought to you again by the Great American Magic Company.com. The place where they have all the magic in the world for all the magicians in the world. Go check them out. I think you'll be glad you did. And you can collect reward points, so this way that it will apply towards future purchases, as well as free shipping over a certain amount and more additional discounts by being a Magic Word listener, just by putting in the promo code of MW when you check out at the end. But more on that later. This week, we are going to be talking with Nathan Burton as part of our Las Vegas Chronicles. This last week, we spoke with, I broadcast the podcast I had done with Gary Darwin. And then later that evening, I went to see Nathan Burton's show. And it was a fine show and one that I recommend also. It's family friendly, certainly, and early enough in the evening that you can get the kids back to bed and you can go and see another show, which is what I did. I saw another show later that evening. It started about 10 o'clock in the downtown area. But Nathan's on the Strip, and it is, as I said, family friendly, a lot of fun, and a lot of magic, a lot of illusions. If you're wanting to see a big-time show with a lot of illusions, I would recommend this one. Is at a good price. And it is a fun show, as I said, fast-paced. Not a lot of dancers and glitz and gals and all that kind of stuff necessarily. In fact, I think they only had two or three dancers, one of whom was his wife. And I said it's a family show because he introduced his mother. She came out. I think she is involved with one thing or another as far as his promoter or agent or something, and he introduced her. He even brought out his little child, I think was about 3 years old or 2 years old, kind of came out on the stage. So it was fun, and I enjoyed it. Now, the podcast that you're hearing here this week is again brought to you by the Friends of the Magic Word, and it's thanks to their support that we were able then to get out there, because that helped to defray the costs for the transportation and lodging and everything else. But I also want to thank Nathan Burton for allowing me to go and see his show and then have an opportunity to go backstage then as well. So I didn't realize until after we were finished that he was kind of in a hurry, because it was Valentine's Day. It was February the 14th, and he was anxious to get things wrapped up and go out for dinner with his wife. So this isn't as long of a chat with my guest as I normally would have, because he was, I kind of got the feeling that he was wanting to wrap it up, and we did. And in fact, I probably wouldn't have gotten this much time with him if I hadn't followed him as we were going back to the dressing room. So as we as he left the stage, and I met up with him, because after the show was over, he's signing autographs, taking photos and everything with the people who are the fans that come to see the show. And then afterwards, I followed him back to the dressing room, and I had my recorder on, and I was recording as we were going. So we were, you might hear in our voice that where there's a little bit of exhaustion, I guess, as we're walking, and you can hear our footsteps as we're kind of going down through the corridors and backstage and winding our way through the catacombs and getting back into his dressing room to do the finish up the podcast. So towards the end of this podcast, this does give me an opportunity then to give you some reviews of a few new tricks that Murphy's Magic Supplies has available. And I have actually been working these, and I wanted to kind of give you my ideas and opinions on and reviews of some of these things that I think you might like. I'm enjoying them. Well, I'm getting way ahead of myself. So I think that's enough for me right now. Let's hear what Nathan Burton has to say here on The Magic Word. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm here backstage. Actually, just finished a show with Nathan Burton. Hey, Nathan.
How you doing, Scott?
Fantastic, as your show was also. You have a very engaging personality and breaking that fourth wall and getting people involved and everything. And I like the way that you use the idea with the four cards, you know, torn cards coming together. You've got your own take on that it guarantees it's going to work.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think you have much better chance of that working with your method. I like that.
Thank you. I'm glad you liked it.
And that was a small illusion. Of course, I was thinking, like, to begin with, when in the first 4 minutes you had, what, six illusions?
Yeah, we crank out. And when the show starts, it takes off, and we do literally like seven illusions. And like,
is that what it is? Yeah.
It's, yeah, we just cram them in.
Well, yeah, I mean, it leaves you breathless, you know, at that point. Now, I heard you say that you're completing 5 years at this theater?
That's about right. I did 4 years at Aladdin, I did 4 years at Flamingo, and now I'm like 5 years here almost at Planet Hollywood.
Now, what's it like to try to get, which way are we going, left or right? Okay. In trying to get your own show to begin with, you were with Review for a while.
I did Be the Ultimate Variety Show for a long time.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then I did America's Got Talent, and I kind of opened my own show during America's Got Talent and trying to do it all at the same time.
Yeah. And I think that would be pretty difficult to try to juggle all that, certainly.
Well, you know, most magicians, most illusions, they're man of many trades. You do, you know, welding and woodwork, and you kind of just do everything.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about recommending other magicians go to be on America's Got Talent?
I actually get a lot of calls about it.
What do you tell them?
I tell them it's an amazing experience, and you have to be willing to kind of go on there and see what happens. And if you go on with an ego, it's not going to go well, because you can't go on the show and be like, oh, I'm a superstar, I've already done cruise ships, I've already done this and that. You got to go on and really just be like, you know, I'm a guy trying to make it.
Right.
So, and it's, you can go on there, you can tape, you can get a standing ovation, and it'll never air. It just, you just never know.
Why do you think that is? Is it because you don't have a good backstory or something?
No, it's just they take the whole season and it has nothing to do with the performer, nothing with yourself.
Interesting.
It could just be they want a guy that's short, they want a guy that's tall. I mean, it's
somebody with the mustache or whatever. You never know.
Or they, you know, they this year they have, you know, last year they had the kid magicians on. You just never know what they want.
Yeah.
And so I tell people, if you go on the show and they don't use you, even if you're like, I went out and the judges went crazy and I got a standing ovation and they don't even air it, it has nothing to do with you. It's just there's only so many spots. 300 people will tape and only, you know, half that will actually.
And even if you pass, I mean, you know.
Even if you can get a, you can, the judges can say, you're going to the next round, and it can never air.
And you may, but do you or do you not go to the next round?
No, you get an off-air elimination.
Nice. An off-air elimination, and I didn't know about that.
Yeah, now they can do that.
Ah, well, that's interesting. And then do you have to sign some sort of a non-compete or some?
Yeah,
what's
well,
the contract
the contract's like 100 pages.
And yeah, so you better get an attorney to work with you.
Not really. I mean, you want to read it, but don't waste the money because they're not going to change the contract. So if you want to do it, and
it's like Apple's terms and conditions. Just go to the bottom and say,
just
agree.
You're going to use it. You're going to download it, whatever. But I mean, the main thing is people are like, well, it has a clause in there that can manage my career. And out of, what, 11 seasons, they've only executed it twice, I think. So, I mean, if you're a magician doing cruise ships and you're like, oh, they're going to take 20%, they don't care about, you know, they're bigger picture. They were someone they can do a recording contract with.
That's what I was always thinking. That's why I was surprised the magicians ever won, you know, and Matt won, or, even like when Terry Fader won, that he's a ventriloquist, and they're not making money off of his show because you don't have the CDs, you know, that they can.
Terry, you know, has a $100 million contract, and they still didn't execute it with him.
Wow.
So I tell magicians, just go on there and just go on there for the ride. Good, bad, the ugly, just enjoy it.
But my feeling has always been, Nathan, and they've called me, and I know other magicians have been contacted too, I always say no because I don't have any end game. In other words, I see that as a means to an end, and I don't have an end that I want that means to take me to. In other words, I don't have a show. I heard Kevin James say, I want to put butts in the seats. I don't have a showroom where I've got seats, you know?
And if you don't have a reason to do it, to benefit from it, then, and if you just don't want to be on television, then yeah.
I don't mind being on television.
No, but you got to be willing to take a risk.
Sure, it's a risk.
For me, it was worth, because I sold $1 million worth of tickets just from being on the show. Yeah. So, but there's other people that will disagree with me and didn't have a good experience, but you know, you gotta have kind of tough skin and just go for it.
I've seen some of those outtakes they have also, in which they make somebody even look worse than they were. I mean, you may have gotten, you think, okay, this is great, I'm going forward. It's like they were showing thumbs down or something.
And if you watch the show over the last two seasons, it's really a positive show.
It has been more so.
They've kind of weeded out the bad, like showing the bad stuff and someone getting ripped apart. There is a little bit of it, but it's really become a the quality of the show and just the positivity has really increased.
A lot of people would say that they want to have a show and work in Las Vegas, and when I was a kid, that might have been a long-term goal of yours. And so, was that something that you really wanted to do?
Yeah, when I came and saw, I'd go to Spellbound, and I would see Tim Cole and Joaquin Ayala, and I would see Mark and Ginger. I was like, oh, I definitely want to perform someday in Las Vegas.
Yeah. And it's amazing, too, because you can also have your family involved the way this is. I mean,
I really
think that that's what also brings breaks that fourth wall, is helping to let people say, oh, well, he's such a cool little young man, you know, because he has his family, is involved in this. It's not cheesy at all. You know,
well, good.
I think that it's showing family values, and the way that the dancers are dressed and everything, that it's not a Vegas type of a show with the showgirls.
No, it's something I think you can bring your whole family to and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And people, other magicians I've talked about, because I bring my son out on stage, who's 21 months old, they're like, why don't you do a trick? And it's like, I kind of like just letting them just come out and not being a bit. It's just whatever kind of happens, and it's but if it's too stagey, it's like, oh, he does that every day, and I want it to kind of feel special
and organic.
Very much so.
Something that happened different every time.
And sometimes he's great, and sometimes he's like, I don't want to talk to the audience.
That's interesting. Well, for those who might be wanting to have their own show, what kind of advice do you give folks who want to come to Vegas? And because I said a lot of people would have that as a goal, as you had.
I get a lot of questions because magicians ask me about coming to Vegas, because we've been here for a long time. It's an extremely tough town. And I almost say, well, first make sure you have the show together, that it's, you either worked somewhere.
And where did you work your show?
I worked on where I got the law.
Where did you learn to be bad? Or, I mean, you know.
Well, cruise ships is a great place because you have to do an hour.
Yeah.
45 minutes to an hour.
And different shows.
And that's, you know, a good place because you got to have the material and you got to be dialed. But then once you have that, forget about that. That has nothing to do with, like, surviving in Vegas and not losing millions of dollars. I always suggest to look in markets around their, you know, if they, whatever state they live in, go on TripAdvisor and look at a tourist town in your area and see if there's a magic show. There's magic shows all over the country, all over the world, that everybody kind of do, like, you know, then come here and try to, you know, risk losing millions of dollars.
Right. Well, nowadays, it seems like everybody, well, not everybody, many people four-walled. I mean, it's not like the old days where the casino would hire somebody, you know.
Some people come here and they open a show and they buy a bigger house and then they lose everything, and it's tough. So I always suggest, you know, looking around in their area, you know, is there a resort area or a tourist area where you could do
a show and dial
it in there and figure out what you're doing and stuff, because come to, you know, it's like going to play, you know, if you're playing high school football, college football, or pro football, when you get tackled in pro, it hurts.
Yeah.
And Vegas is pro ball, so when you get tackled, it hurts and it costs you a lot of money.
Well, what about working in some of the other places that might be Shreveport, Louisiana, or something?
Yeah, I mean, those are great areas.
Yeah,
I mean, and
sure.
I've worked in all over Atlantic City. I was actually doing Atlantic City and Vegas all at the same time, going back and forth.
I remember that.
Yeah,
you were jumping on the plane.
I was going back and forth. So, but yeah, any area that, you know, that doesn't have 100 shows already is a good spot to go check out.
Well, yeah, you know, when you were talking about resorts, that reminded me there probably are a lot of places near a major metropolitan area where a lot of people would live, where they might have some sort of a theme park or something.
Something,
and so
yeah.
If you're not working a theme park, there could be a hotel that you could work a banquet room and maybe sell your own tickets. And, you know, people will want to stay at that hotel to see the show. You know, during the daytime, they're doing all the rides and whatnot, bring the family to the hotel where, you know, you're featured.
Well, an area that doesn't have a lot of family attract, they may have an amusement park, they may have a zoo, they have something there, but they're always probably going to be looking for something else.
I'm thinking like Fiesta, Texas or something like that, you know?
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah, something near that.
Yeah,
know?
Totally.
And so, as far as living in Vegas, you plan on staying here the rest of your life, or what's your long-term goals?
I love Vegas, and we're not leaving anytime soon.
You're going to continue to expand the show?
Yeah, we're always putting new stuff in.
I was about to say, how many times, you know, I was talking to Ray Anderson about Esther's Follies, and he'll put in like one new thing a year, you know, and he'll kind of work on that and everything, and because it's just a fantastic show.
Yeah.
But how many things would you say that you put in?
It would go in spurts. Just in the last year, we probably put 6 or 7 new things in.
Okay.
So it varies. I'd love to say I put everything in once a month, but it's sometimes I'll put 3 things in. Like today, I put one, not a new trick, but a new part of the, it was a small thing, like the little piece of plexiglass I set the phone on. That was new.
I like that idea.
That was just because the person was bumping the screen with their hands. So we were
that could mess with it a little bit.
So we're just, but that's a little thing today, not a big deal from the audience, but we, little stuff like that we add in every day. Or a new joke. new line or new sound effect I added a couple, like a week ago.
You still record your shows this way that you can go back and listen, and so this way that you say, okay, well, this guy had a good line, I should use that next time or something?
Yeah, I record every show, yeah.
Do you? And then you go back and just watch it then each evening when you go home? How often, I mean, you go and watch it and then erase it?
Sometimes I won't watch it if there's nothing that I don't remember that I want to see. Mm-hmm. Other times I'll watch the whole show, otherwise I'll go back to one spot. It just depends on what we're working on at the time.
Yeah, and do you write most of your stuff yourself, or do you have other script writers?
Honestly, the dancers will give me a line, they listen to the show every day, and they'll be like, oh, let's try something here, or friends of mine will come to the show, and they'll give me an idea.
Now, in trying to sell seats, I think that's the hardest thing, of trying to market that, you know, and that's where all the money, it seems like the guys are going out and trying to have a show in Vegas. It's like, okay, well, I got to have the cab back signs, or I've got to have a billboard, and people a lot of times might be popular within the city limits, but outside, it's like, who knows who Jeremy Cambridge is, you know, because he's been annoying, you know. And anyhow, my point is, I guess, I'm not going to ask you how much money, but I'm sure there's a lot that you do in order to promote sales. Do you do a lot, like, on social media? Do you?
It's a million. It's not one thing. It's a million things.
Yeah.
So everybody's kind of looking for the answer how to sell tickets, and you know, unless you're on television every week, or you know where they want to see you,
like Chris Angel, you know, had Mind Freak, and I think people come in because, you know, that's his deal.
Yeah.
And I know that Murray Sawchuk, you know, has different things. He's like on Pawn Stars and different.
Yeah.
And you're always trying to find something. Do you look to try and find things on television or opportunities like that too?
We did Foolish last year. We do Masters of Illusions every year. We tape a lot of other stuff. So we're always doing TV stuff.
Yeah. Well, not that far from.
See the next show. So we can step outside.
Okay. Yeah, we kind of step out here so this way that it's a little bit quieter in the parking lot. When I interviewed, I think I told you, Farrell Dillon, we just sat in the stairwell.
So yeah, at least it's kind of hard to find a quiet spot.
The quiet spot, yeah. That with a TV show or something like that, with a spot, that have you looked at trying to have, you know, more exposure on television? Where you've actually,
we've done a lot. I mean, we've taped a lot of stuff over the last 10 years. I mean,
yeah.
So, TV helps, you know. People see us on shows and they come to the show for it.
And when you are out of town, do you take some corporate dates from time to time?
Yeah,
we've
taken the show to Hong Kong, we've taken the show to Singapore, we've done some corporate stuff. But a lot of time now, when we take time off, it's vacation time.
And when you do you have someone to fill in?
No, usually we take off during a slow time.
Okay, and that slow time, when's the slow time in Vegas? Is it during a summer or?
No, summer's busy.
Really? Because I think it'd be hot. But of course, I guess people are out on vacation.
Vacation. So yeah, it varies. It's up and down throughout the year.
Okay, so there's really not one time that's, you know, slower than the other or whatever.
No, it's a couple days here. When there's a big convention in town, we'll take off.
But you don't have anybody to replace you, because when you're selling tickets, they're coming to see Nathan Burton. They're not coming to see a magic show.
Believe it or not, I tested this out and tried. I've had other magicians fill in for me, James Amir and Kevin James and other people that have filled in, and they've either seen the show before and they kind of expect what they're going to see, even though it's an excellent performer. It has nothing to do with the other performer. It's just they have in their mind what they want to see, like they want to see the signature pieces, and if they're not doing it, it doesn't work out. So we just take the time off.
I wondered about that. I mean, you know, like, let's say Matt King, for an example. Yeah. He's out this week going. Yeah. He went home to see his mom in Louisville. And so I'm not sure who he's got to replace him. Sometime, you know.
Yeah, somebody else.
Michael Finney or somebody. Yeah. You know, that it's a solid act. But people there, I think, are coming to see a magic show and not necessarily Matt King. You know, so it's a little bit different, I guess.
I'm sure there's people that are disappointed that he's not there.
Oh, who have been told, you got to see Matt King, see a show, and then we
people
get here.
If the word of mouth is good, you got to go see this magician, and they're not there, they're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I talked to Steve Bergazzi about that whenever that he fills in. That's the first thing he tells him. He said, I know you folks are disappointed. You know, you're not going to get your money back. You know, he kind of makes a joke out of the whole thing.
Just kind of win him over,
Yeah, exactly. And how did you search to try to find the right trick or series of tricks to win over your audience quickly, you know, with your opening?
Vegas is tough. I mean, they want to be entertained.
Quick.
And so we open fast and furious, and then once I feel like I kind of have them, we slow down a little bit.
Yeah, so you kind of have the good spots. Have you thought about having anything that's going to look more dramatic, like a, I don't know, like a smashing stab? Not, I mean, not necessarily, but something that's going to be, well, I guess the straitjacket is a little bit more serious, certainly, but it's not done in a dramatic, it's kind of a comedic fashion.
It's kind of not my style, so
you don't want to change. No, you shouldn't do something if it's not comfortable.
It's stuff that kind of fits me.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting also that you don't introduce one of your dancers as being your wife until, you know,
till the end.
Well into the show. Yeah. During the end of the show. And that's intentional to kind of...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, even though it's in the opening video at the very top of the show, I don't think people really catch it. And at the end, then they go, oh, that is one of his, you know, one of that is his wife and that is his kid on stage.
Right. Now, V is another show that plays here still?
Yeah.
Okay, and what do they have? V is for variety.
V, the Ultimate Variety Show. Yeah. Seven of the world's greatest acts all in one show, and right now Jason Burns in there doing his bird act.
Okay. And he's here all... Well, he lives here, I guess.
He lives here. Yeah. And he just got done doing a Carnival ship where he was flying in for 5 years, and now he's doing that, and then I don't know what else he's doing after that.
I was supposed to chat with him. We've been trading phone calls. And I haven't been, my time's kind of limited over here, too, you know, with folks that I've been doing. We'll get right back to the rest of our conversation with Nathan Burton in just a few moments, but I want to welcome back again Eric Citron, because last week he wasn't with us due to the nor'easter that had come through, and they had all that snow and ice up there, but I want to welcome him back again, and of course, the Great American Magic Company. Hey there, Eric.
Hey, Scott, great to be back. Nothing like a New York snowstorm to slow things down in March.
Yes, but fortunately it wasn't but about 24 hours, I guess, your internet was out, huh?
Yeah, it was. We still have snow on the ground, actually. It's a pain in the neck, but what are you going to do?
Well, pain in the neck if you slip and fall, I guess. Yeah, ridiculous.
Exactly.
So tell me, what's new? What kind of new? What's up? How are your tricks?
We got some. There's a couple of effects I'd like to briefly talk about. There's a new one called out Mr. Golden Balls. It's from Ken Dine, and basically where you have a bag. And there's four balls in there, and there's a gold ball, and without any electronics or magnetics or anything like that, you as the performer are able to derive which person has the gold ball. And it's getting a lot of buzz right now, and it seems really cool.
Yeah, I like that idea. That's something in which you can have a lot of volunteers up on stage. It's not necessarily just a one-on-one. And a lot of things that are sold through magic shops or people tend to buy are a lot of things that might be kind of close-up types of tricks or card tricks or something that's new and hot. But it's always interesting to find something that's going to be really good and play well from a stage or from a parlor standpoint where it's a stand-up type of a thing and involve more than just one spectator. So this sounds like a perfect opportunity to get something like that.
And is a prediction involved? You're able to predict which ball is going to be left for the performer. So it seems pretty cool. It sells for $99. We have plenty in stock. We'll get it out to you right away. You know, it's something different. It packs small, plays big. So, you know, it's something that you could, you know, take with you on the airplane without having to worry about it and, you know, bring four or five people up on a stage, fill up the stage for not a lot of money.
Wow, that's great. So what else is new?
There's a new effect out by Mark Oberon called Bang On 2.0. And basically what it is a spectator names any card, no force. The very same card is inside an envelope, inside your wallet, and it's spot on every single time.
Wow. Just like that. That sounds pretty good. Well, you know, Mark Oberon, I believe, was a FISM winner also, I believe, the same year, shared the stage and the prize with Sean Farquhar, I believe.
Exactly right. This is directly from his FISM winning act. Mm-hmm. And it's $99. Well, it's $100, and we have plenty of these in stock as well. I haven't seen it in person, but I've seen the videos, and we have the videos on our website, and it looks incredible.
Well, let's round it out with a third thing. So they say the third time's a charm, and so what have you got? Something else? One more thing?
Yeah, here's a real hot seller. We sold a couple of these in 24 hours. It's called InstaChange by Nicholas Eyhorn, and basically the premise is from your wallet or your pocket, you show a receipt from a well-known high-end store. You show it, you fold it into ace like you would do a normal dollar bill switch. You immediately open it, and it turns into a real banknote. And the banknote can be handed out for examination or given away. Now, this is available in dollars, yen, pounds, and euros. So whatever your proclivity is, you can get it, and it's inexpensive at only $34.95.
And it's more than what you think. You're just not getting that little flesh-colored thing. This is something different.
Yeah, this is something that's a tangible item that gets attached to the bill. So from what I've seen, it's not what you're talking about, correct?
Right. That sounds great. And you were talking about the first items that were $99, and tell them about the deal they get for shipping and also for Magic Word listeners.
That's right. For our Magic Word listeners, if you put the code MW in there, you will save $15 and you get free shipping. So you're not going to be able to get these items cheaper anywhere, I don't believe.
And, of course, as you said, that you'll have that quick turnaround. So as soon as that you receive that, that gets shipped out within 24 hours.
Exactly. And, you know, like, and we have a lot of one-of-a-kind items on our site, too. So under the showcased, there's a little box on the front page of the website called Showcased Magic. If you take the time to go there, you'll see some items that are not normally seen there. We are getting calls from people on a weekly basis now looking to unload some of their magic collections to us, which is what we were hoping for. So, you know, just, you know, check back on a regular basis where you can find some stuff that you always wanted at a really great price.
That sounds great. Well, thank you, Eric. And I think everybody should go and check out that again. It's called TheGreatAmericanMagicCompany.com. Go check them out, save some money, and get some good deals, and go forth and do magic. There you go. So thank you, Eric. And let's return now to the rest of our conversation with Nathan Burton.
Yeah. My time's kind of limited over here, too, you know, with folks that I've been doing. So you don't really attend many other conventions or anything. Like when you were younger, I'm sure as a kid you went to a bunch.
I went to all the time. Now it's easy. Magic Live's in Vegas, and I can squeeze it in between shows. I don't get to see the whole convention, but I always run over and check it out for sure.
Yeah, when I was chatted with you briefly at Magic Live.
In the dealer's room, that's right.
You were. I think you were getting ready to see Mike Michaels' stuff.
Yeah.
Does Mike build the stuff here in Vegas?
Yeah, he builds in Vegas, yeah. There's a house here and a shop.
What was it? I was watching someone's video. Oh, I know what it was. There's a movie out now called Magicians Hidden the Impossible, I believe, or something like that. And that show features John Armstrong and Brian Gillis, David Menken, and Jan Rubin. And it was a four-year documentary
to follow
the guys.
I've saw the trailer for it. I have not seen the whole thing.
Well, it's going to be on Netflix, I think, like now. I think it was just released like within the last day or so.
Awesome.
And I did an interview with Marcy Hume, who was one of the co-directors of the thing, and we were talking about that because what made me think of that, I guess, is because we had the Mike Michaels was actually Mike Michaels was in part of the show as well, where Jan Rubin had gone in and Mike was building something.
Yeah.
So has Mike built many things for you? Or
A couple things in the show. Yeah, the cereal box and some of the work on the snowmobile and. So yeah, he's.
I was thinking. I saw a snowmobile. And I thought, that looks like something that he might have built. And so
he's done a couple of that.
I like the idea that really folded in well from the snowstorm to get into the.
That was all. Everybody did snowstorms at the Magic Convention when I was growing up, and then I always thought you got to produce a snowmobile, then throw out a rope, and then someone could ski behind the snowmobile and drive off stage. That was kind of the idea.
So is that still ultimately kind of you're trying to figure out how to do that?
Nah,
that's enough. You got
it's appearing in the show. That's enough.
No sense trying to top all of that then too. Again, I like the idea that you have mixed, you know, large illusions with the smaller things and going back out into the audience and using the video and everything. So without doing, did you ever do manipulation? You ever work with?
I did when I did a water act when I was a kid. I did multiplying soap bubbles, which are basically billiard balls.
Yeah.
But that's about the extent.
Yeah. Because I was thinking about Mark Kalin, about how that he, you know, sits on the edge of stage and
he does the balls and
right,
it's great.
It's a beautiful piece, and he has that where he talks about growing up and everything. So it's a nice kind of a sentimental piece there as well. So.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and so as far as changing the show and whatever that you kind of like, you think that it's tight then right now. It seems to be. I'm just saying.
I think it's the best version, but we're still working on new stuff for it.
Aren't you always?
You know, always tweaking, but I think it's the best to date. But it should be. Mm-hmm. I mean, always should be evolving.
How did you select the idea for the cell phone idea? I mean, there are several things out there.
Yeah.
That's one of the best, by the way. I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
A friend of mine showed it to me, and I was like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
And it's great. And it's, so that's where I get good material for my friends.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about next, about your friends. You have a band of confidants or some other guys that they've seen stuff and say, hey, you know, that this is something cool we might want to think about.
We're always, like, talking about ideas and different things, and everybody kind of knows my style, my friends, and they're like, oh, this might fit well with you, or we'll change it.
Who's in your magic crew? Who do you kind of trust?
It just depends on who's in town. I have people on the East Coast, Sebastian. Mm-hmm. Who's a lawyer magician, Joe Romano, who's a school show magician, Russ Merlin, who works in V. It's just a bunch of whoever comes in and sees the show, and we always like pick it apart. And Greg Fruin up in Canada helps me. And a bunch of guys.
I like Greg's show. Have you been up there to see the Niagara Falls?
Yeah, it's great. Mm-hmm. I went up to see the theater and the Tigers, and Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, he was at Vectors, actually. I think, no, not last year, maybe the year before. Yeah, here recently. And I thought, wait, what's Greg doing here? Because it's a close-up, you know. But he does some close-up.
Yeah, yeah, no, he's starting to do more and more.
Yeah, because he and Jason Byrne used to be partners years
double
ago.
Double Vision, yeah.
Yeah, that was it, Double Vision. So does... does he, do you know if Greg comes down and works here at all? Do you ever see him?
He did. He was down here for Full Us. He taped that last year.
That's right. Yes, right. Now, speaking of Full Us, I know that Sean Farquhar went back and fooled him a second time.
Do
you think about going back again?
You never know.
Yeah. Well, just another opportunity, you know, to kind of promote your brand.
Yeah. No, television's always good.
Yeah, any way that you can get it. So it's just trying to find those platforms.
Yeah. I mean, we've gone back on and done guest spots on America's Got Talent, which has been great.
Yeah. Now, we talk about television quite a bit, but is there an opportunity or something that you're thinking about, like pitching a show of having the Nathan Burton
we've already
hour or something?
I think every magician's pitched a show, so everybody's pitched right now.
Yeah, so nothing that's in the offing right now.
We've, you know, like a lot of people, have gotten really close, and it's all timing. And
everybody, don't want to talk about it, you know, because you never know.
Never know. But I think every magician should probably pitch a show. So
at one point or another over there. Working here versus working in Atlantic City or anyplace else, I mean, they're all a little bit different, and you like them. And the stages are different, but you like this, obviously, the best.
I love working here in Vegas, Planet Hollywood.
There are other showrooms. I mean, I'm assuming that you were looking and pitching other places, you know, but how did you decide upon this, or did this was just the one that came through?
There's a dozen reasons why, but... I have the most freedom here, and I can be creative, and I'm not restricted, and I can change it daily. And there's just a lot of great things.
And it's David Sachs Theater, which used
Correct.
To be Steve Weirich's theater.
Yeah.
And so, you ever see Steve? What's he doing nowadays?
The last time I heard, he was in Branson. He was at the big theater up there.
Well, the Branson people, seems like they have a lot of turnover. Over there.
That seems like a tough market.
It would be. You know, it's they say. Las Vegas for the geriatric, you know, because, you know, Andy Williams and others, seems like, and Roy Rogers and people, you know, and
that's slowly gone away.
Slowly, that's right. Because there's no gambling, you know, or anything up there. Did you ever work in Branson at all?
Never worked there, but came close once to do a spot in the show there. But no, but I've been to Branson. There's some great magicians that are working there.
And when you're traveling, like you were saying earlier, back and forth to Atlantic City, I assume obviously you had two sets of illusions. You weren't.
Duplicates, so we can. Yeah. Or if we go to Singapore, we send a sea container with the other set.
That's kind of what, you know, I was talking with Franz Ferrari about sending that.
Multiple sets, he has.
And he said there are always some, well, now he's got the thing in Macau, kind of a permanent, but before he would have different sets that are going out at any given time. I could just imagine him looking at the ships, okay, I'm moving this one forward and this is going this way or that.
Totally.
Yeah, and have you thought about, are you familiar with his thing he's doing out there?
Macau.
Yeah. Now, you've got your own thing, and there's no way you can go and do that, because the problem is over there that he's booking, like, for a year at a time.
Yeah,
you know?
I can't leave for...
No, of course not.
I can leave for a couple of days. That's kind of my...
Yeah.
The threshold for leaving, but that's about it.
Yeah. I think that his deal really is best for those guys who aren't doing a long-term permanent show like you've got, you know, here. But it looks like what they've invested with, I don't know, $20 million or whatever it was.
It looks amazing.
Yeah. I'd like to go over just to see the place. You know, he gave me a video tour. We were chatting one time here recently for the podcast over there. Well, in working here now, there was another show that was going on. That was V, that we were in the backstage. We were kind of walking through. We're now in your dressing room here.
Yeah, no, that was Recycled Percussion. It's another show that was another act that was on America's Got Talent that have their own show now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's always interesting. A lot of the acts that you wonder about on America's Got Talent, what happens to these guys?
They go off and do their own thing. Yeah,
because they've gotten good exposure. It's kind of like on Shark Tank, I guess. You know,
exactly.
Even though that you don't sell it to the sharks, you know, you've got good exposure.
Yeah.
You know, over there. And so you feel like that the exposure that you had gotten on television had led to some of the success? I mean, not, like you say, you sold $1 million worth of seats know, over there, which was kind of...
No, it helped me in the beginning because I didn't really know what I was doing. And then people would come and say, oh, we saw you in America's Got Talent. And then they would come to the show. So it kind of helped me when I first opened. So, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. America's Got Talent's been an amazing experience for me.
Yeah. So you maintain good relationships with those guys, obviously, because they want to call you back from time to time. I think when I asked you last time, you know, you're going to be going and said, if I am, I can't talk about it.
Yeah. No, so, they've been great to me. They're great to work with.
Yeah. And any backstage stories or something about... something that hasn't ever, something's gone wrong?
We've had over the years, we've had funny stuff happen. You know,
like
girls' costumes break, power outages, but nothing.
That'd be kind of a bummer with a power outage.
Yeah, and kept on going.
Yeah, or that. Yeah, the toilet paper thing isn't working or whatever. You know, there was
little stuff.
Yeah, I noticed one thing. I love the thing that you had done with the microwave. You know, where and have you taken that one out, or is that rotated in and out?
It was in for a good 10 years, and then mm-hmm. we just rotated out when some of the new stuff came in.
Have people told you that this is their favorite? They come back to see a particular
people
thing?
People come back and they're like, "Oh, we love the new stuff," and
sure.
They're like, "Oh, what about this?" And I was like, "Oh, we're making changes," and they're like, "Well, we're coming back to see the new stuff," and yeah.
And so, yeah, like you say, you're always making a little bit of changes and tweaking this and that because...
Trying to, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I always feel like the best thing is that if you're going to be working in something new, you sandwich that between two good things.
Yeah, because over time it gets dialed.
You know, I was having a conversation with Stan Allen about this week about the Magic Magazine, and he was talking about mm-hmm. how that the railroads didn't know that the reason they kind of went out of vogue was because they didn't know that they were in the business of transportation. They thought they were in the railroad business. And
yeah.
I was saying, well, you can carry that on, you know, to magicians, that a lot of times we don't recognize what our business is. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily trying to mystify people or sell magic. You know, I think it's a personality. You know, what do you think it would, what is it that's your mission? What are you trying to do?
I think at the end of the day, the audience has to like you.
Yeah.
Or if they don't like you, they don't care about you. And if they don't care about you, they're not going to care about the show.
Right.
So at the end of the day, you know, you just want them to, you know, our show is very lighthearted and it's fun. But I just come in, they're on vacation. I mean, most people only go on vacation once a year, you know, if
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah.
And if they're going to bring their family and spend their hard-earned money to come see our show, we just want to give them a great product
sure.
at a great price and have them have a great time. That's kind of the goal.
I was talking with a guy once who, he and his wife were over here from England, and he was retired. They call him a pensioner. And so he said that he had saved all his money and that his one big trip for his lifetime was to come to the United States and go to Las Vegas
wow.
and then on out to the Magic Castle and to see some. And so that's right. When you think about the heavy burden you have of somebody saying, "You are my bucket list. You know, I came to see you."
That's a big order. I mean... You know, and most people only see you once in your life. So even if you're sick or not feeling well, you want to give them a great show.
How do you keep that freshness?
I just try to remember, like, when I go to a show, it's like you only see it once, and you want to have a great time. So I try to remember that, like, these people are here to see it just once.
You know, they used to say that Thurston would stand back behind the stage, and Curtin would kind of look out and say, I love you. And he would, emotionally involve himself with each of the people. He would imagine who's sitting in this seat and what they'd look like. And,
oh, wow.
And so do you do any kind of self-preparation before your show of trying to pump yourself?
It's a little busy. We're just getting everything ready and just making sure the show's going to run smooth. So there's
so many things going on in your mind. It's like, okay, Nathan Burton, boom, you're out there. Nothing.
Pretty much, it just once it starts. And then once the show starts, that's when I can have fun.
Yeah, because I hear, you know, Jeff McBride always talking about how that you do facial, you know, exercises, you know.
There's no time for that. not for me. I there's so much stuff going on backstage and just... technical issues and dancers and
at the last minute the things may be tweaked and
we're just always tweaking stuff and
well especially when you say you got like 7 illusions in 6 minutes or something, you know,
yeah,
there's a lot of wheeling in and out
there's a lot of stuff going on
and so there's no time really. I mean you're prepared, and so you know again, you know, thinking about what Johnny Carson would do, it's standing back behind the curtain that he still had butterflies, you know, in his stomach every night, even though he'd done that for however many years. And it wasn't until they walked down stage and they say, "Here's Johnny," and then people would applaud and he'd get his first laugh and then you relax. Do you still get butterflies, or because that you're so busy with everything else you don't have time for
the new stuff? Will definitely give me butterflies, or if we're doing something on television I'll get butterflies just because, you know, always something happens on television. It's just, you know, you can do something for 10 years, but then one time the cable can snap and you just never know. So it's always, you know, and especially if it's live television.
I think it's important for listeners to know that even professionals like you who are here in Vegas, you know, before, how many seats are, that's a, what, 800 seat, 700 seats?
It's about 500.
500 seat theater, that you still get a little bit nervous because people are thinking, gosh, I can't do this because I'm nervous. And so it's, I think it's important you say, yeah, I get nervous too.
I think everybody gets nervous. It might just be different reasons.
Sure.
New material, somebody, a reviewer in the audience, for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of hate that when you know there's somebody out there. I'd rather after the show say, did you know so-and-so was there? It's like, no, I didn't. You know, I hope he liked it.
That's an easier way to do it, yeah.
Yeah, but you can't control those kinds of things. You know, they're going to come, they're going to come. And so with that, I guess that you can rehearse something as much as you want. But, if you're going to be putting something in, it's going to be a little bit new. That's why I save you a sandwich.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, between a couple of things, you know, it's like, okay, well, that didn't work the way I wanted, but here's something I know you're going to love. I mean, you don't say that, and you're
No, but you know you can open strong and close strong, and if there's a little... you know, fluff in the middle, then you're fine.
Yep. You know, whenever I, even working a restaurant, you know, walking out to do some close-up, that I walk in the restaurant, and as I'm walking through the door, I've got a smile on my face. I mean, whether I've had a bad day or not, the important thing is,
be happy.
It's got to be kept fresh, and that's why I think it's important to make the audience think that you are. So that's why I was asking about, you know, how do you keep things fresh? And so...
You just got to. There's no choice. You just got to do it.
Yeah. If you can't be sincere, then fake it.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a thing. So.
Well, sure, true.
Yeah. Well, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. So what's your word? What is it that your philosophy of life is? It could be a phrase, you know, or what's important?
The biggest kind of word is just work hard.
Yeah. Because you'll make it.
Yeah. I think if you work hard enough, you can make it.
Okay. Well, you've proven that, you know,
you
from
go.
What you've done. Well, listen, I know this is going to be kind of cut short because that I've got to leave.
You got another show.
And you got, you're doing another show tonight? You're
no,
done
I'm
for
done. It's Valentine's Day.
Also.
I got to go take the wife and kids.
That's where, they're waiting, and I'm holding you up. See, that's why I'm wearing pink shirt
there
tonight.
Valentine's Day.
Even though my wife's not here with me. Well, Nathan, thanks very much.
I appreciate you
doing that.
Thanks,
so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Nathan Burton, and this is Scotty out.
I want to thank Nathan Burton for being my guest on the podcast today and also for getting a great seat for me in the show. So this way that I was able to see everything and enjoy it with the rest of the audience. It was a great show. And I recommend, again, if you're going to get a chance to get out to Las Vegas and looking for a good family-friendly show, that you need to go over to the Miracle Miles Shops that's there in Planet Hollywood area where Nathan Burton is performing nightly. And you can check it out online where you can buy your tickets in advance. As I said, it's a fairly inexpensive ticket. And it is more than worth the money. You'll have a good time. So go and see Nathan's show. So now it's time for a few magic product reviews. This week, I'm going to have four new products from Murphy's Magic Supplies. And the first couple remind me of Occam's Razor. Look it up. The first one is from Alakazam Magic and Mazik. Or Maz, as he goes by, and it's called Decisions. What you get with this are the gimmicked cards, basically, as well as a DVD that explains this. Now, let me tell you the trick itself is where that you have decisions that were going to be made by your volunteer. It's either going to be yes or no. You show two blank cards. It's blank on one side, and the other side has a little... kind of a speech bubble, if you will, kind of like a cartoon speech bubble with a little line and a circle. And inside the bubble would be yes, and on the other one is the word no. And you will shuffle these up, put them face down, put one of the cards in your pocket, and ask the volunteer then which one they think is on the table. They say yes or no. And you can play this however you want so that the volunteer is correct every time or wrong every time. And you can put some money down on it and bet on their answers. And when I saw this to begin with, I thought, well, there seems to be something that seems to be, to me, to be a natural way of how this must work. There are some alternate handling tips. I should say there are handling tips and then alternate handling tips on working with the cards so that it looks very natural, and certainly it is. As I said, Occam's Razor came to mind whenever I first saw this, the video of this. However, I did put it into practice and worked it up at a restaurant, and I probably did it at least a dozen, maybe 16 tables, and I found that it played really, really well. This is something that can easily fit in your pocket, and it's not a pack of trick. It's something really different, and let me just say a few things about what I like about this as well, is that it gets a lot of people involved. The way that I use it, and I found after some trial and error, that it worked best whenever that I would ask, I say, look, I'm going to bet against you. I'm going to say that whatever you say is going to be the wrong answer. And so this way, they'd have a 50-50 chance. You think it says yes or no. Let's say they say it says no. I turn it over and it says yes. Okay, now I'm going to double my wager. and I take some money away from my tip area that I had some tips on the table there, and I'll put it, I'll say, look, I'll double this over there. So you want to say it again, what do you think? Yes or no? They'll say yes, and I turn it over and says no. Now that's after you've shuffled the cards. You take the card out of your pocket, shuffle it around, so this way you try to obfuscate this a little bit. Now, the reason I would play it up that way as opposed to letting them be the winner is that, number one, is the people who are around at the table, or if you're in a cocktail strolling environment, the other people are saying the opposite of whatever that they are. So in other words, if you're betting against this person and they say no, the other people are saying yes, say yes, you need to say change your mind. So they get involved with this also. So they say, okay, are you sure? You want to go with your friend's decision or are you going to stick with that? And then it's, of course, their answer is going to be wrong. And because they're wrong, they want to keep trying again until they get it right. And at some point, after about the third time, I think I found that's about optimal of them losing. You have the example first, then do it three more times. That's about it. But, I mean, you could do it more, but I think that kind of gets the point across. The reason is that if you do it whenever that they're saying yes, that is that they're correct in that, they don't want to play again. It's like, oh, next time I might be wrong, so I'm gonna quit while I'm ahead. And then it's not really as much fun. So I think it's more fun whenever that you're betting against them and you're going to say, I'm going to say that your answer is going to be wrong, because they're going to say, no, okay, let me try it again. But if they're correct, they're going to say, see, I told you so. You know, I don't need to prove it again, and they won't go any further. So that's just a little subtlety on this. Anyhow, it's a cool little trick, and I would recommend it. It's one of those things that I tried out in my restaurant and my strolling environment, and I find this is compact. You know, it's flat. It's really good. A lot of things that Alakazam comes out with are really good. This is another one of them, and by Mazik and from Alakazam Magic in the UK, and it's called Decisions. I would highly recommend it. Next up is a trick called Sherlock Coin, or like Sherlock Holmes and with a coin, Sherlock Coin. Yeah. Again, Occam's Razor. Whenever I saw this, I thought, okay, well, this must be an obvious way, and it reminded me just a little bit of Daryl Martinez's ambitious card deck, where he ties a rope around it, and you put the card in the middle of the deck, and then the card comes out the top off the deck, even though it's wrapped up in a rope. I thought there's only one way that can be done, and the same thing with this. There's only, well, there are probably other ways, but the obvious way would be correct. But there are, again, are some handlings explained and some alternate handlings as well that are explained on the DVD that you get with this deck and with the box and everything else that's involved. Again, here is the effect. The effect is that you have a coin that's borrowed. In my case, what I did is I had a little bag, coin purse, full of a bunch of quarters. I dumped them out, and then I would ask someone to take a pen and sign their name to the coin. As they're busy doing that, and explain that's something you probably don't normally do, I mean, who signs a coin? I would have the cards removed from the box, and I would have another card selected, and I said, when you're finished that pen, hand it to the person over there, let them sign the face of a card. They do. The card is returned to the deck, and then the cards are put back in the box. I take the coin, and the coin has vanished, and I was wearing short sleeves, so that way they knew it wasn't going anyplace. One person said, hey, it's under your watch. No, it wasn't under my watch, which would have been a good idea. Joshua Jay's got some good handling on that too, by the way, as an aside. Anyhow, the point is that the coin has vanished. I then opened the cards, and they really are not necessarily anticipating a card, but or the coin to be in there. But you set the deck down and then cut off a packet of cards, and underneath that is the coin. You then show, say, is this your signature? Yes, it is. And it's sitting on top of a card. You turn that card over, and sure enough, of course, that's the signed card. Now, the handling of that took a little bit of practice in order to get that right. So this way that you're picking up the correct number of cards in the right order. You know, I even fiddled around a little bit with trying to add a short card and try to make this so it would get right every time. I found that the gimmick that you get doesn't require you to have to do anything more than what they give you. You don't need to add anything or fix the card any other way. So I think it's good enough as it is. It just takes a little bit of practice, and you can pick up
packet of cards, and you can spread those out a little bit and show that it's, again, just a regular normal packet. Again, their card would be underneath that coin. It's very good. The video that you get is actually a link to the instructions, and on the instructions, it's quite thorough on how that works, and again, some handling and alternate handling on how to banish the coin. And the one thing that the instructional video does not show is how to repair the box, because after a number of times of using this, something that's in there could break or needs to be restrung. There's something that that makes this work perfectly, and I wish that it would have gone into some explanation, but the link that was on there says the instructions on how to repair the box will be forthcoming, but they haven't got that ready yet. Now, it is fairly new trick at the time that this is being broadcast, and so it could be by the time that you hear this or within the next few days or weeks or whenever, they may have that video available for repairing the box. But, after doing that again, probably 14, 15 times, I liked it a lot. It was something that I was closing my set with it when I was working at tables, and it is something that you can carry around with you, and because you can do a card trick with one box of cards and then do another card trick or coins or whatever else, and then you can switch that box out so you can just do a cold deck switch, or you can have, it doesn't really matter, and I maybe use red deck of cards and then I'm going to use a blue deck of cards. Most of these are made up in a blue deck. I believe when you purchase it, it is a blue deck. If you want a red deck, it's on special request, I believe. So it's something that I recommend, something that does work, something that, as I said, I was closing it. I mean, I remember at least two different tables had said, now that's real magic. I can't explain that. One person said, my brother's a magician. He likes magic, and I think he's going to try and figure out everything. And that was at the end. He said, I have no idea. So that was really good. So there you go. I liked it, recommend it. Again, it's called Sherlock Coin by Thomas Ribollet and Anthony Stan, Sherlock Coin. I recommend it. Next is a cute little trick, and it's a variation on a silk in egg, and this is called Silk to Chocolate by Sean Yang. And it is just exactly that, where it could be played as a sucker gag, or it could be played straight on, in which you essentially have show a red scarf, just a red silk, and put it in your fist, which magicians are wont to do. I don't know why, but we always do that. We always make a fist and stick things in it, and whether it's salt or silks or whatever. Anyhow, so you poke the red silk inside your fist, and when you open your hand, there is a little, what do you call that, chocolate that with the gold kind of a foil around it, and nestled inside of a little chocolate corrugated shell, kind of a thing. It's a Roshan chocolates. They're widely available internationally. It's a popular kind of, like a Godiva chocolate or something. It's a high-end type of chocolate. And so it's a nice little sweet. So essentially, it's a silk to chocolate, which is exactly the title. It's nothing more than that. And Sean Yang explains how that you can play this as a gimmick, in which you show that, okay, well, actually, it was just a hollowed-out piece of chocolate, and that you can explain how that they can make one at home, and you vanish this, and then, of course, in the process of that, you switch it for a real piece of chocolate, and then you open it up, and then, of course, it is chocolate, and you hand that out. Or that you play it as just what it is, that, it's a silk to chocolate, and as you start to put it away in your pocket, then you switch it out for a real piece. Oh, well, that's not nice of me. I should have offered this to you. Let me give you that piece of chocolate. Or, like in his case, he suggests that you hand this out straight away and say, oh, you should know better than taking candy from strangers, and puts it back in his pocket and said, however, I'm not a stranger, I'm your friend now, and then you give it out. So it's kind of a cute little gag of trying to give out the chocolate, and that way they can open it up and see there's no silk. So this way you're not really explaining the silk and egg gag. So that's a cute little thing, and if you are working in an environment where the chocolate won't melt You can leave it in your pocket for a while, several pieces of chocolate, or you can go back into your bag and get some more or whatever, and put it in your pockets or your jibber-say or wherever that you're working pockets, wherever you want to store those. Anyhow, cute little trick, Silk to Chocolate by Sean Yang. And I'd say that's recommended too. Finally, on this number four of my list of things I was going to talk about here this week is called Opus by Nefesh. And this is a cool trick, and in which it comes in two different kinds. One is a Mona Lisa, and the other one is the Vitruvian Man by Leonardo da Vinci. Essentially, the idea is that you have four pieces of plastic, and they're kind of like, they're very shiny plastic, black on one side, and we'll get to the other side in just a moment, but it's like a heavy credit card material type of plastic, essentially, four slates of plastic, if you will. And you hand them to a person face down and allow them to shuffle them however they want, and then as you take them back, you can say, do you want to turn this clockwise, or leave it as it is, or whatever. But essentially, they're about the size of credit cards. Once they've done that, you then lay them out in a pattern, 1, 2, 3, 4, in whatever order they want. You want this one to go here or this one to go there, wherever you want them to go. When you turn it over, the resulting picture is the Mona Lisa, or if you purchase the Vitruvian Man, it's that. The Vitruvian Man, of course, you know, that's the popular thing of Michelangelo, in which it's where the man has his legs and his arms spread out. It's a drawing. Look it up if you don't know what it is. But it's well known in popular art by Michelangelo. Anyhow, it was Da Vinci, not Michelangelo. Da Vinci. So they're both Da Vinci, whether it's going to be Mona Lisa or it's going to be the Vitruvian Man. So the idea is that that's one outcome. The other outcome is that you've taken these cards, these four credit card things, out of an envelope, and when they come together, they are mismatched so that they are mixed up a little bit. They don't make a perfect picture, but you can see what it would have been, let's say like Mona Lisa, and then you say open up that envelope, and when they do, there's another black backed card. When they turn it over, the way that the cards are aligned match exactly like the prediction that you had over there. Got it? Okay. So there are two outcomes. One, that the picture is correct, or two, that the picture is incorrect and will match your prediction. Now, this is definitely not a self-working trick. There's a little bit of preparation that you can do with the cards once you receive them, and in which that you mark them yourself, but you're given some options on how that you want to mark them so that it turns out the way that it should. But more than that, it depends also on some handling of the spectator and of the cards. So this is not something that you're going to put in your act right away, and it does require some thinking. So it does not allow for drinking. So you're either going to think or you're going to drink, because if you mess this up, it's all messed up. It can only come out one of two ways if you follow the directions implicitly. It's a brilliant thing, a very good thinking, and I like it a lot. They're very well made. They're beautiful cards. I do another Mona Lisa trick that I have my name and website on the bottom of the cards. That was something from Card Shark. That's the Mona Lisa card trick, which I do all the time, which is a fantastic trick and completely separate. One of my highest recommendations for that trick. But this one is something that would complement that. So if we've been talking about the Mona Lisa, I can bring that out first. I would do this one and then follow up with my other Card Shark Mona Lisa card trick. But this is also something that you can carry in your pocket and do impromptu with the coffee person, the barista, when you go to Starbucks next time or something. So it's a cool little trick, and I would recommend this one also, but only if you want to put the time into it, because
it will take some time and memory and probably some work on doing it on a regular basis so you don't forget it. It's like speaking a foreign language. You just need to do it on a regular basis, because if you forget, you have to go back and watch the video again. It's about a 50-minute, 60-minute video to watch all the variations and how this thing all fits together. But it's one of those things, again, that if you do it, I doubt that there are other guys who are going to be competing with you, because it's going to take some of your time to put this together and do it correctly. So there you go. That's called Opus by Nefesh. So that wraps up the items that we have for review this week here on the Magic Word Podcast. And all these products are available through Murphy's Magic Supplies, and you can purchase them through thegreatamericanmagiccompany.com, or you can take a look over here at the Magic Store here on the Magic Word Podcast, and they'll be shipped right out to you. There are some wonderful things here, and again, I've tried these, and I like these, and other kinds of things I review also. If I don't like them, I'll tell you. And so these are my honest reviews, and I hope that this is helpful. So that's going to pretty well wrap it up for us here this week, but I do want to again thank you for listening to the Magic Word Podcast. We are approaching our 350th episode. This is pretty amazing for this to have been around for this long, and for me to have the kind of listeners and supporters that I have, and I thank each and every one of you. I want to also thank in particular those who are the friends of the Magic Word, as I mentioned earlier, the ones who had helped by giving me some financial support in order to defray costs, and I hope that you're, by the way, enjoying a little bit better kind of audible experience with this, because I'm using my new microphone. I just bought a Zoom, what is this, a 4HN Pro model Zoom microphone, and I've got some other microphones and cables and things I recently purchased as well, so that will help improve the quality of future podcasts as well. So it's because of your financial contributions I'm able to go out and to make this podcast even better by having better quality equipment to use and to take on the road. And even just yesterday I went out and bought a new case so I can haul this stuff around a little bit easier when I go from place to place as well. And so I'm going to leave it at that and say, until next time, stay well, get booked, and work hard. This is Scotty out.